This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, it is Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown. That is Wes Reynolds. That is Kelly Bidlin. When I say that, that's for you people that are watching over on the YouTube channel. Hello, that's what we look like.
Yay.
Appreciate you guys stopping by here. While you're here, go ahead. It's absolutely free to hit that subscribe button. You know, it doesn't take you 1 second. Just go ahead, hit it. Do appreciate that a ton. Of course, on the audio side, subscribe, rate, review, always appreciated over there as well. Now, typically, we would get into what happened the previous week in the golf world and then get into the tournament of the week. That said, this is the Masters show. So we're going right into the Masters. If you want to know what we think about the tournament from last week, well, you should have listened to Wes and Kelly on Monday, maybe on a numbers game or something like that. Then you could have figured out maybe what was going on there. But at the end of the day, it was a soggy Sunday, and I'm not really taking a whole bunch from what happened on Sunday there with that tournament as it is anyway. So we get into the Masters, all kinds of storylines, all kinds of things for us to talk about here, boys. And Wes, you write one of the best previews there is on the internet whenever it comes down to breaking down everything. Of course, that available over there on VSiN.com for our pro subscribers. Go in. If you are a pro subscriber, you can start for as little as $9.99. We always have some sort of special running. I don't know. Just start typing in promo codes. Something will pop up. You'll get some sort of deal. I'm almost positive of it. But Wes, let's jump right into this thing and let's talk about Augusta. It's at the same place every single year, unlike the other three majors, and that's why this one is so incredibly special.
Yeah, exactly, Matt. And that's why you get guys that play well here typically continue to play well here. You know, in terms of form, like you have a lot of guys with, you know, for instance, Justin Rose, I'll bring him up. 20 times he's played here, he's finished top 20 12 times. So you will get form runs like that here at Augusta because it is the same course. So experience does tend to matter here. Of course, no debutant won since Fuzzy Zeller, since 1979. Augusta National Golf Club, par 72, 75, 65. It will play a little bit longer than a listed yardage most years, but not a lot of rain. There would be a lot of water on the course, obviously, to make it look nice and pretty for everybody watching the telecast over the 4 days. But it's going to be firm and fast, as it usually is going to be. You have water in play on four holes. Wide fairways. These are some of the widest fairways you will get on tour. So when we get to the stats, probably won't hear a lot of driving accuracy. Perennial rye overseed with Bermuda base. The rye rough is not very thick. It's about maybe 1.5 inches, but you do have a lot of trees, a lot of pine straw that'll give you some obstacles if you are errant from the tee. So, you know, you could get away with a lot of misses, but you don't want to miss maybe too necessarily much. Greens are bent. Bent grass, fast and slick, could be as high as 14 or 15 on the stimp. So if you don't get your approaches in the right spots, they're going to roll off the green because these are going to be slick greens. So you get into those shaved runoff areas. You don't have a lot of rough basically around the green. So you are chipping from short grass here. And, you know, with your approaches and the recovery chips, obviously distance certainly helps here with the par fives. That's where a lot of the scoring is going to be. But you could still be pinpoint with your approaches. That's still a good idea. Not a lot of bunkers here. 44, third fewest on tour, but under 50% in sand saves. So you still don't want to get into them, even though they are very scarce. Pine straw, as I mentioned, unless there's tree trouble, though, you can get out of that. Certainly, you remember when Bubba Watson broke my heart and hit it out of the pine straw in the playoff when I had Louis Oosthuizen at 81 and just stiffed it and ended up winning that in the playoff several years ago. Average greens, about 6,500 square feet. There are a lot of undulations on these greens. They're hilly and they're fast, so These are not going to be these 11 or 12 on the stint meter that some of these guys have been playing. And plus the fact that it's almost 7,600 yards. This is a long walk. We remember that when Tiger was in the field a couple of years ago when he was dealing with the injuries and how exhausted he was, you know, walking this course. And that's going to be it for a lot of guys here. So, you know, if you look at comparisons, Quail Hollow, I mean, there's no like one real comparison, but in terms of course correlation, like Quail Hollow, because it's long and tree lined in the southeast, Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus's Ode to Augusta there in Columbus, Torrey South because of the length, Bay Hill, little bit of Riviera because you have to shot shape in both directions. And you've had a lot of Riviera winners, by the way, that have also won here at Augusta. So those probably are the nearest course correlations or comparisons. And I have pictures of all the holes courtesy of the Masters website in the article at VSiN.com, a little video with Rory taking you through all 18 holes of his final round. So that's good to get insights where maybe if you watch that video, you'll notice something when you're watching the coverage. So that is all up at VSiN.com.
Kelly, I know we joke about this has become a joke now, but I will say that I did have the luxury of going 2 years ago, and you always hear about the course being long and all of that, but
got me this shirt.
So the first thing I did when I got there, because I didn't know where I was going to end up posting up and how it was all going to work out, I just walked all 18 holes to make sure that I saw the whole course, right? Cause I just didn't know where I was going to end up being, for how long I was going to stay, whatever, and yada, yada. So like I walked in and just walked all 18 holes. It's a walk. I'm a younger kind of semi-fit dude, whatever. Like it's down, it's up, it's all around, it's whatever. Like it is definitely one of those courses that after, you know, four rounds of doing that, you're going to feel it, which is why, and we talk about this every year with this tournament. Yes, the field is technically over 90 people. Really, the field is 40 people, 50 people maybe, or something like that. I mean, you and I, Wes, we all use Datagolf. They come up with their own odds for the tournament outside of what you're able to get at the different sports books. There are 16 different players that they list as infinity. Like there's just like infinity to one for them to win the tournament. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that they have listed at like 1,000 to 1. So, I mean, I don't know. Again, it's
watch out for Vijay Singh. He's a sleeper.
So, right. You know, again, the field is technically a number. It is not really that number.
The field is, Matt is describing, if you're wondering where all these come from, you have 66 members from the PGA Tour, 10 from LIV, 6 amateurs, which I'm going to guess those are the infinity odds, 6 senior past champions, infinity odds, except for maybe Zach Johnson, DP World Tour with 2. I do not know who's actually the DP World Tour exceptions this year. Maybe Wes does off the top of his head, but
Casey Jarvis is one of them from South Africa.
Oh, that's right. I was about to bet against him and I was like, who's this Casey Jarvis fellow? And pulled him up. He's playing pretty well, actually. And then one from the Japan Golf Tour.
Oh, Kataoka, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Yeah, they added more for some international events where they said if you win the Crown Australian Open, which was Rasmus Nygaard Petersen, or if you win the Japan Open, which was the gentleman that we just mentioned, or they tried to add more, I think, international players. So there are exemptions. You'll see some weird exemptions on the list I have in the article at VSiN.com where it's like, oh, you won the Open de España, where it is kind of a little bit random, but nevertheless, that got him Masters invitations.
So Kelly, when we looked at the odds board, then like you can kind of, again, you can get to a point on the odds board where maybe you want to just stop looking. Don't get tempted by some of the other odds, but it is Scottie Scheffler at the top, but a bigger number attached to him than we normally see. And as I refresh this right now, I don't remember the last time we saw a 6-1 available on Scottie Scheffler pre-tournament, but Caesars has just moved to 6-1 on Scottie Scheffler pre-tournament here. John Rahm taking a lot of money. John Rahm 2 weeks ago was about 16-1. Now is as low in the market as I'm looking around, as low as 8-1. I think you can still find a 10-1 out there as your second shot on him. Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau, all kind of jumbled up in there, depending on which book you're looking at as far as the odds. But those are kind of that next little tier of guys. And then you really jump down from there when you get to the Matt Fitzpatricks and Tommy Fleetwoods and Ludvigs and stuff like that, getting a little bit bigger numbers with all of that. But as you take a look here, did you think we would be heading into the Masters with a 6-1 market high on Scottie Scheffler?
Oh, man. No, I did not. And tip of the cap to Gil Alexander, who did. Wes, what was this? Probably 5-6 weeks ago, you were on one Monday And it was right probably two tournaments into the Scotty struggles. And Gil asked me and Wes, what does he look like at the Masters? What's his number if this continues? I think I said 5-1. I think me and Wes were both kind of in that range. Like, it's hard to imagine him getting past 5 in that short of a time period. But yeah, here we are, 6-1. I think I heard someone bring up a 7-1 earlier today they saw out there. Obviously, this is a week where you're going to get a lot of friendly boosts and stuff from your sports books too, so you can always apply those. No, I didn't think we were going to get there, Matt. I think it puts a lot of pressure on us as golf bettors to figure out what to do with not only him, but I just think the top of the board, especially when we know it is very likely going to be one of these guys. It is a short list of guys that can truly win here. We say it every single year, but I don't think we can say it enough. And yeah, man, I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of guys that we go through here today on the pod that I'm going to say, you know what? I don't have a problem with anybody backing whatsoever, but I'm not in on. And right now that is me with Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah. It's the odds board again has broken. It's interesting because even though we do have a smaller field when we're talking about, like, you know, who can actually have win equity here, the numbers get pretty big, pretty quick. And that kind of lets you know, to go back to what Wes was explaining, how often it has been somebody that has been a truly pedigreed player that has come out on top here at this tournament. I mean, you're getting down to guys that we are, you know, we like as golfers and stuff, and you're finding 70s and 80s and 90s, 100-1s on these guys that are pretty decent golfers. But as far as win equity, when it comes to the Masters, the odds board just does not dictate that they have very much of it. And so it'll be interesting to see as we get to the guys that we ended up playing this week, how far down we went and what the justification was whenever we do all of that. But Kelly, each and every week we go in and we do model all of our plays. We go in and, again, let's lean on we're probably getting new viewers, new listeners and stuff since it is the Masters. Here's the disclaimer. None of us are coders. We lean on the great work of some of our friends and partners out there in the industry. Shout out to Betspert. Shout out to Rick Rungood. Shout out to Datagolf, et cetera. People have built those models. But we do go in and decide what's important to us and weight that accordingly. So each model is unique. It's just we're not doing the actual back-end coding on all of that. I like to give credit where credit's due so that nobody thinks that I'm over here like coding models or anything like that. Though with AI, you better watch out. I might have me by this time next year. Who knows? I might be
here
doing
comes
my own,
Matt. AI
yeah, I
Matt.
Might be doing my own models next year. We'll see when it all comes down to it. But not this season as it is. So we talked about the length of the course. Obviously, distance is going to play a factor in all of this. There have been shorter dudes that have won this tournament. However, my caveat to that is, yeah, but like everybody's long now. Like everybody's longer. And so I think the days of the shorty are done. That's my personal opinion. I don't know about you. Wes can give his thoughts on that as well. But, you know, back in the day when the shorter guys were winning, there were still only like 10 guys that were super long on tour. 50 guys are super long now on tour. And so if you're short, you're really kind of getting left in the dust by a lot of different fellas. So what did you end up throwing in the model this week?
Yeah, and I think a good example of that is it is Hideki, right? I mean, he wins here, what is that, 5 years ago at this point? It's 5 years ago. Just 5 years ago. Hideki driving distance was probably middle of the pack, right? Average, maybe slightly above average. And now he's way below average, right? So it is, I think that I'll run through everything I plugged in, but I think every year that we do this, I like to get more detailed of what do I think is the most important. And for those people that are just sitting at home and maybe you don't listen to this podcast every single week, maybe you don't have access to some of the sites that we brought up, you can just go to pgatour.com and look up a lot of these. I am weighing so heavily around the green play. So around the green, scrambling, anything we want to add in there. That and par five scoring. Par five scoring is so important to me here. It's like where 3/4 of the strokes gain come from. So I think when you then go to break that down further, Matt, right? If I'm talking par five scoring, what goes into that? Well, distance off the tee is going to help that. Stellar approach play is going to help that, right? So those things are definitely factored in my model. But I think if those are two stats that I could drop, I would say are the most important to me here is around the green and it is par five scoring. We see where all the strokes gain come from with the par fives. And then this is the toughest place and the most important place on the PGA Tour to play around the green. So I think that is really, really important to identify this week with your golfers. And it's like it's everything in the bag, right? You're going to have to do everything this week. It's going to be demanding off the tee, on approach, on the greens. The greens are so tough, right? And we do bring up how experience matters with those and helps with those. But we also have seen just not great putters win here. And I think the lightning quick bent grass greens, the guys are seeing bent grass for the first time this season. I think that all plays into, yeah, you can figure out why you don't need a traditionally great putter that could just, you know, we talk about all the time on this podcast, you just have a spike putting week. And I think that still plays out here like it does most other places on the tour. So just for others at home that are using similar sites that we are, I did go strokes gained off the tee. Pretty heavily. I did that more heavily than I did kind of anything distance, ball speed, carry, but kind of did use all of those as well. Looking at all of our kind of distance stats that we have. Approach, very heavy for that this week. Greens and regulation, I did do small. And then the long approach shots that we know are going to be asked these guys, really 150 to out to over 200 yards. I am mixing all of those in this week. Par five scoring. I did par fours, 450 yards or longer on those. The around the green, scrambling, bogey avoidance. And then strokes gained putting, just regular. We are getting a bent grass for the first time this year. And then kind of fast greens, lightning quick, whatever you want to use there, I think is something to look at least small for me this week. And then a lot of tournament history and kind of just long, hard golf courses. Who plays these well? Who's going to put themselves into position to matter here this week? And, you know, for a lot of guys, too, that are coming over that maybe we aren't seeing every week on the PGA Tour, I think some of those matter a little bit more for.
Yeah, Wes, Kelly brings up the putting thing. I have heard some people out there bring up putting this week. I actually just think that that is wrong. I think that this is, you don't win this tournament putting. You win this tournament not putting horrifically. Like it's a defensive putting course. It's not an offensive putting course. And so, yeah, like the only putting thing I put in, depending on which model you use, if you're over on BetSpurt, you can put in three putt avoidance. If you're over on Rick's site, it's kind of like, what does he call it? Approach putt performance, yeah, or whatever, mm-hmm. Basically how close you are to, you know, that's what I used for putting this week. Again, I'm looking for the dudes that aren't going to go out there and rip it like 9 feet past and then like have these knee knockers and stuff coming in with all of that. Like that's how I factored in putting this week. I do not think you win this tournament putting. I think you win this tournament by not putting horrifically.
Yeah, Matt, I think you're right. Like, this isn't the week where it's like, okay, strokes gained bent grass putting or something like that. Because these are so unique. They're not just bent grass, but they're super fast. Mm. And, you know, so because you don't have a lot of tournaments where you have that kind of combination, I didn't really do a lot with putting. I think, you know, what you said, approach putt performance, which kind of judges your lag putting, or if you want to do something like strokes gained short game, which also includes around the green, as well as maybe a little bit of putting. But I didn't do a lot of putting here necessarily this week. Where I started with my baseline, and I think that this is good if maybe you're new and you just bet the majors, and maybe you don't bet this every week if you're kind of looking at stats that are separators. And we know there's already separation in this field, as you guys mentioned earlier, where like half the field, almost half the field, you could probably just cross off anyway. Because they're the older players, or maybe they're first timers that won like the Sanderson Farms Championship or something, where it's like, can they really win against the big time guys? And they usually don't. So I started with like strokes gained tee to green, basically. And I think that that's a very simple baseline. And who are you going to get on that list? You're going to get the really good players. And I think that that separates it. Strokes gained tee to green, driving distance. Because you don't have a lot of thick rough, and you do have some water here, but it's not all over the place. So you can bomb away off the tee. 16 of the last 17 winners, by the way, inside the top 50 for driving distance. So, yeah, what Kelly mentioned earlier, the Zach Johnsons and those type of guys, that's probably not going to happen. And when Zach won, to be fair, it was really nasty weather that year. So that was a great equalizer for the shorter hairs. We don't expect that nasty weather this week. Around the green, I think, is going to be more important this week than normal, because players are going to hit the greens maybe, what, somewhere around 60% of the time. So you're going to have to chip from the tight lies and not just hit the greens, stay on the green. as I mentioned earlier, because these greens are so fast and they have undulations, you will see good approach shots that won't hold the green. And then you hear the, oh, for the crowd reaction because it was such a good shot. And then all of a sudden you're having to chip from like 30 yards away or something. So strokes gained around the green, scrambling, which was about little bit more difficult here than tour average, actually a lot more difficult. So scrambling percentage I thought was important. Approach, of course, because it is tough to gain on approach here. I think it's one of the toughest of any events that they have. But it's not just finding the greens, it's also having the proper angles toward the pins. So each of the last 10 years, by the way, the Masters winner who eventually won the green jacket was top six on approach. So I do think approach is important. Bogey avoidance. The overall bogey percentage at Augusta is close to about 40% higher than you will get at the average tour course. So you can get a lot of squares and worse on this course in a hurry. So I used a lot of bogey avoidance. And then going back to the par fives, what Kelly mentioned, I'll run a couple numbers here. I won't belabor the point, but Rory last year, 11 under was the winning score. He was 7 under on the par fives. Scotty, 11 under, 9 under on the par fives. Rahm, 12 under was the winning score, 10 under on the par fives. Scheffler, 10 under in 2022, 8 under on the par fives. Hideki, 10 under overall was the winning score. He was 11 under on the par five. So he was actually over par for the rest of the holes. And you could go on and on, even going back Patrick Reed in 2018, 15 under was the winning score. He was 13 under on the par fives. You have to take advantage of those. And I have those listed, of course, the par fives here, number 2, number 8, number 13, and number 15. And how often do we see, you know, you almost get like albatrosses on some of these. So these par fives can be had, and you've got to have them, I think, if you want a chance to win on Sunday. I'm with Kelly on the strokes gain par four, 450 to 500. There are two others, by the way, that are 440. So this is the toughest set of par fours you're going to get pretty much all season. And then, you know, a couple like historical tiebreaker stats. I did like strokes gain total average per round at Augusta. Now I included the amount of rounds. So like the top on that, I think, was like Ludvig Åberg, but he's only played 8 rounds. He's only played like 2 years here. Whereas you got like Jordan Spieth, his data was 44 rounds. Hideki, 54 rounds. Justin Rose, 58 rounds. And then you'll have some guys that maybe have only played a handful of times here, but they just happen to play well the couple times they were here. But I thought that was good to look at in context, because I think you want some experience here. You want some guys that have seen this course and, you know where they're doing, because course management, I think, is what ultimately wins this thing. And there's no real stat necessarily that quantifies that, maybe a little bit tee to green. But I think that's why you see elite players. We were going through like the world rankings of some of these guys. I think the worst world ranked player to win here in the last 15 years was Charles Schwartzel in 2011, who was 29th in the world. So it's not like you're getting a guy that's ranked 115th in the world, or you're getting somebody like at the Open a couple of years ago when Brian Harman kind of ran away and hid from the field, because all the courses are unique in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship and the PGA. Not so here at the Masters. I think you know what you're getting.
Guys, Masters obviously almost here, starting on Thursday. And if you think you know the field, you can go in and you can prove it over on our VSiN High Stakes Masters Challenge over on Splash Sports. It is a $500 entry. It is $100,000 guaranteed. It's a fantasy tiers contest built for golf bettors. So you go in, draft 6 golfers, 1 from each tier in the field. Your top 5 scores count. Lowest combined score across all 4 rounds wins. Your worst golfer gets dropped automatically. However, missed cuts carry an 8-stroke penalty. So you got to make sure that you roster dudes that are going to be playing on the weekend. It's not a luck contest. It's about golf knowledge. So this is going to close on the 9th at 8 a.m. So Thursday at 8 a.m., splashsports.com/VSIN, splashsports.com/VSIN. Use the promo code VSIN for a 50% deposit match up to $100. You're going to get $20 in quick picks as well. And then 100% quick picks boost over there on Splash Sports. So splashsports.com/VSIN, VSIN is a promo code. $500 entry, $100,000 guaranteed in that prize pool there in that one. So, yeah, I mean, basically everything you guys said for me, I mean, honestly, if you want to look at my model, it is basically tee to green distance, bogey avoidance is like almost the entire model for me. And then everything else kind of comes into a play, because the deal is I did put in around the green and a little bit of scrambling and stuff. But like, basically, if you're scrambling well, then you're avoiding bogey avoidance kind of like couples in those stats, right? Yeah. Because it's like you're having to scramble well to avoid bogeys. Like you're having to have a good around the green game in order couples to avoid bogeys, right?
Yeah, three putt avoidance too, right? Yeah. Like kind of, yeah, it's bogey avoidance is a good stat. Covers a lot.
So it kind of takes all of that into play. But I did throw that stuff in there just for some, you know, tiebreaker stuff and different things like that. But I mean, I'm looking for dudes that are long. I'm looking for dudes that aren't going to go put up huge numbers. I'm looking for dudes that are basically just kind of playing this course, taking what the course gives them and not trying to overpower Augusta. You're not going to be able to do it. Bryson famously came out and said, this is a par 67 and then looked completely horrible for 4 years at this tournament. After he said that, you can't overpower this course. You have to take what it gives you sometimes. And that's kind of what I'm looking for here. And so honestly, it goes back to the reason why we say experience matters here, because that is a naive statement from someone who had not played a bunch at Augusta. And then you get out there and you realize like, oh, never mind. That's not how this course works. That's not going to, it's not going to fly here. So we'll see how our models stack up and how we can try to get
these
bets
in. Bryson, though. It's get back more cocky, Bryson. I like statements like that. I miss those. I miss those.
I mean, listen. He's probably just biding his time until his contract runs out on LIV and he'll come back just like all these other guys. I mean, it's just, it seems like right now it's just like waiting for the contract to end. And so we'll see. He might be back on tour and talking trash to everybody here pretty soon.
Was it the U.S. Open last year when he was moving the post out of the way? I don't know why. I'm never going to get that, that image out of my mind. It's just him moving the post out of the ground. Get out of my way.
Okay, want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about guys that we didn't put on our card. Want to make sure that we have enough time to do our drawing, because yes, I said last week all you had to do was be a YouTube subscriber. So there you go. Everybody has a public name. We're going to do some random drawings, send you guys some stuff, and then also want to make sure that we have time to talk the tiers contest as well. So Wes, let's get right to it here, and let's get into the bets that you have in the account.
Yeah, and I start off and this is going to be a little bit more chalky. Like you're not going to see like a ton of bombs, and bomb being a relative term. Like I think 40-1 to win the Masters, which most week would be mid range, is like a bomb. If you really look at the records here, especially in recent years. So, where I started with John Rahm, and I did play him at Caesars on Sunday at 15-1. That's not available, but there's still double digits out there. I think double digits are better, still probably worth the play. Let me give you his five starts this year. 2-2-1-5-2. That's an average of 2.4 in terms of his finish. Leads LIV in total birdies, leads in greens and regulation, fourth in scrambling, fourth in driving distance. So he's kind of showing the complete game. And I just think maybe it's a timing thing, because if you look when he joined in 2024, when he went to LIV, he was the defending champion at Augusta National for the first time. And there is a reason why. There's a multitude, I think, of reasons why when you look at it. And I have some trends in the article at vsin.com. You have not seen a repeat winner since Tiger Woods did it in 2002. And so I think there's pressure. There's, you know, planning the dinner and all the media and all that stuff. And that's why you haven't seen anybody repeat. So I think there was the pressure. And then there was probably, okay, misgivings and having second thoughts about moving to LIV and, you know, how people were going to react. And then last year he came in and he hadn't had a win on the season. Well, this year he does have a victory. And I think he just might relish being back like on the big stage, right? Because he's been playing, LIV has been playing internationally. So they've been in like Australia, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Singapore. Like they've all been on in the middle of the night. You know, Jim Nantz even talked about, hey, I haven't seen much of Bryson DeChambeau this year, and got some hell for it. But it's on in the middle of the night, so he's probably not watching, seeing what he's doing over there, because they haven't played stateside. But I think this week Rahm's going to have a chip on his shoulder and be like, hey, remember me. So very big chance at his second green jacket. And then a couple guys that are looking for their first. Xander Schauffele, 18-1. Injury riddled season last year. Did win in Japan at the Bay Current. But he did have top 10s in the Masters and at the Open, even though he's dealing with that rib injury most of the year. coming in hot, I think, right now. He started off slow the first couple events, but three top sevens in his last four starts, was third at the Players, was clearly the guy I was worried about because he posted a number and I didn't have any exposure to him. But fortunately, Cameron Young was able to finish ahead of him. Inside the top 10 in Augusta, five of the last 7 years. I think he's starting to peak at the right time. And keep in mind, this was a guy that less than a year and a half ago had two major championship trophies on his mantle. We had the PGA and at the Open. So, yeah, Xander, I think 18-1. It's not a lot, but it seems like a pretty square price, actually, for a very capable player. So I did play Xander Schauffele. Also, going back to Cameron Young, who was good to me at the Players, 23-1 was the biggest price I saw at DraftKings. Great form, of course, won the Players, T3 at the Arnold Palmer, T7 at the Genesis. He is the number three world player right now. He's got six major championship top tens in the last 4 years. So he has contended in a major, and now it's just kind of like, get it done. Well, guess what? He got it done in what is called the fifth major at the Players. And the last two Players winners, here's a meaningless trend, but maybe has some context. Last two Players winners, of course, were Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, and they went on to win the Masters that same year. So do we get a three-peat with Cameron Young? I think there's certainly a very good chance. I would expect him to be a contender on Sunday. And then a guy that hasn't really been a contender on Sunday very often at the Masters is Matt Fitzpatrick, plus anywhere 22-25-1. You might even see him in the low 20s right now. I was impressed with the resilience, and I credit Kelly for getting back on the horse with him at the Valspar when he had that disappointment at the Players. It's like, man, that's going to take a little while to get over that. It took about 7 days, and he grinded it out and won. So that shows me he's got the mental toughness and the mental fortitude, I think, for these type of challenges. Third tee to green, seventh on approach, and in strokes gained total on the PGA Tour this year. Putting has gotten a little bit better since he left the West Coast and has gotten back to Florida and into the Southeast. Best golf he's played in a few years. So I think Matt Fitzpatrick, even though the form line is not going to stand out to you, I think he's definitely worth a go this week. And then Minwoo Lee, 35-1. He was kind of my FOMO play that was my last ad. He doesn't come into Augusta on the back end of the victory like he did last year at Houston, but he's a more consistent player. If you go back to September, he's got six top tens in his last 12 starts. He's seventh off the tee, 11th tee to green. So I think Minwoo can cook here. I know he's never really yet to be the contender in a major. I think this is the time he's on that first page of the leaderboard. And then two more here. Patrick Reed, 43-1 is where I got him. He's anywhere 35-40. Obviously, Brooks's defection back to the PGA Tour has gotten more publicity and coverage than Reed's, since Reed has been playing overseas on the DP World Tour. And Patrick's not coming back, by the way, till late August and then full time next year. But he hadn't been sitting on his dupaiage, if you will, here. He is playing a full time schedule on the DP World Tour, lifetime membership. So he's taken advantage of it. He won twice, one in Dubai, one in Qatar, also second in Bahrain. So I think even though he hadn't played and teed it up in about a month, I think he's ready to go. And he's finished inside the top four here in two of the last 3 years when he wasn't playing near as well as he started 2026. Like we watched last year, it's like, oh my God, there's Patrick Reed right there third. Like how the hell did that happen? You know, because he wasn't getting any of the coverage, and he's just a guy that knows how to get around this place. And that's a guy that I think maybe is an outlier with some stats, because he's not always going to be up there at the top of the stats when we model stuff, but he's a guy that you just know has the course management and is so good around the green. He can make stuff up here at the Masters and play very well. And then my last shot, I guess it's my bomb. My longest price was 65-1. I didn't have any triple digit guys this week, but Akshay Bhatia, who won the biggest event of his young career when he ran down Daniel Berger on the back nine at the Arnold Palmer, 8th for approach, 10th for putting. Probably shouldn't have went and played over at DLF there for the Indian Open a few weeks ago on the DP World Tour. He did not play well. And that course, by the way, is a brute. Like, that's one of the hardest courses in professional golf, and you don't really make a lot of birdies there. It's very tricky and didn't play well, but if you take that out, ever since Phoenix, he's been terrific. He's been one of the best players, I think, in the game. So this is the time I think Akshay, you know, that left-hander, and left-handers have done well here, Bubba, Mike Weir, Phil Mickelson, because you can take different angles at the pins. So I think Akshay is very live at 65-1.
Kelly Bidlin, where did you end up this week?
Yeah, I like Wes's card. I do. I like Wes's card. That's pretty good. I will start first getting the futures that I've bet out of the way, because it definitely affects, I think, the overall construction of my outright card. I will quickly comment, I think that if I didn't have any bets rolling into this week, I would have an outright on Minwoo Lee. I do not have an outright play on him, but I do have a top 20. Really like Minwoo this week. I'm with you definitely there with him, Wes. Rom, I think, same thing would be on my card. I wish I would have bet him last week when we were seeing like those 16, 17, 18s. And I wanted to see where a lot of these numbers were going to go at the top of the board. I don't think any surprise at all that he's getting bet and just getting shorter and shorter. So really like Rom, really like Minwoo. And then Wes and I do share a couple others. So the ones that I bet before this week, Maverick McNeely 120-1, Russell Henley 60-1, Chris Goddard 45-1, and Matt Fitzpatrick 35-1. Goddard, I did come back around and play in the top debutante market this week. Obviously, a guy who has no experience here. He is the favorite in the debutante market. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, Matt, on the Beating the Book pod with Gil Alexander. I think there's a couple other names in there that actually absolutely won't just go away. I think Bridgman and Penge are both definitely quality players.
Can I jump in here really quickly, though, and I'll let you go ahead, because I did play Bridgman, and I think those are the two right top choices, Goddard and Bridgman. I played Jacob Bridgman. Goddard has the win equity, but I like Bridgman winning at Riviera. And I think that there's a big correlation at Riviera here to Augusta. Maybe he'll figure out the greens better. Bridgman, by the way, has not finished worse than 18th in any year for the PGA Tour event all season. But Goddard, I think with the win equity, is certainly the justifiable favorite.
Yeah,
Did you land on that too, Matt?
I told you this yesterday, Kelly. Yeah, I like Bridgman in that market over Goddard. But, you know, again, it's between the three of them. I mean, I think Penge is another guy that just, you know,
again, you can make a case
all three proven winners, and any of those three, I think, are definitely live.
Yeah, yeah, and shop around. I guess that's what I would say on that market, because I think I saw Goddard up as low as in the threes, and then I got him like plus 475, which felt pretty generous. So yeah, that was at Caesars, I believe, and Bridgman was pretty close to him. He was like maybe plus 510 or something like that. So regardless, if you're going with either one of those guys, make sure you shop around. So again, Fitz, Goddard, Henley, McNeely were futures I already came in with. These are always ones that do this every year. I'll probably bet it's more than usual for me. Usually I enter this week with 1 to 2 to 3, I would say, that I've kind of bet. So what I do is I'll bet those lightly, and then I kind of like to let the odds reset week of the Masters and figure out what else I'm going to add. So what I've added then other outrights this week, I did take a bigger position on Fitzpatrick. So I bet him again at like 25-1. Everything Wes talked about, but the lead in form is just fantastic. Seventh off the tee, fourth on approach, 12th around the green. It's really checking all those boxes. If you've been listening to this podcast regularly, you've gotten like a weekly putting update basically from me or Wes on Fitzpatrick. It feels like, I don't know how many times going into a tournament, we're like, wow, if the putter could just get back to normal.
Yeah, he's 148 right now, but now he's jumped up to 96. Yeah.
But we're there, Wes. We're there at the right time, and I'm with you, man. I think my favorite bet this week is Fitzpatrick in the outright market. And then it's Fitz outright top 5, top 10, top 20, ladder all the way down for me. I still don't know. I never hear anybody use ladder down, but I'm going to go with that. Outright and then ladder down, okay? All the way to the top 20. And then the only other bet that I made this week outright so far, Cameron Young, I'm in there with you, Wes. I saw a 28 at the very beginning of the week, jumped on that immediately. I thought he was going to be kind of where he's priced at now, like 21, you know, 20 to 22 ish. And I didn't know if that was going to box me out. When I saw a 28, I thought that was good to jump in. And look, I think anything mid 20s is a good bet on Cameron Young. I think he's really one of the guys, him and Fitzpatrick, that I was the most interested in getting involved with this week heading into this tournament. Last 24 rounds, third tee to green, third off the tee, eighth on approach. The scrambling and putting numbers are good. We know the putter can get hot with him. 10th in bogey avoidance. He's one of the longer guys on the tour. Masters results, played here 4 times. 2 missed cuts, 2 top 10s, right? He's proven he can do it. He's proven he can miss the cut here. So might be a fun ride with Cameron Young this week. Outright top 5, top 10, top 20. on him for me. I am going to leave. I've got one kind of outright slot that I've got circled, leaving open either to catch one of these big names that drifts a bit before the tournament starts or to jump in live. I'm probably going to leave a spot open for that. And look, I'll be honest. I've talked about this on different shows. Maybe you heard me say it. Rory could slide far enough. I think I saw him at a 14-1 already today. You start to get middle teens for me. I might be buying in on Rory. I would say the same about Rom, but he's not going that direction. He's going the other direction. And then Shoffley, you brought him up too, Wes. I think Xander was the same guy I felt the same way about. He seems to only be getting shorter now. At the beginning of the week, there was a little back and forth on him, but he seems to consistently be getting shorter. So I don't think I'm going to get there with him. However, besides Young and Fitzpatrick, Shoffley is the other top 10 bet that I made, plus 150. You'll find that out there on him. You ran through it all, Wes. This guy has proven he can do. He is consistent here with his finishes, and I like where he's rounding into form right now on the tour. The season results, T3 at Valspar, third at the Players, T24 at the API, T7 at the Genesis, just quality finishes. He really is rounding into form after a slower start out of the gates. Okay, top 20 market then. Cameron Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, already brought up those two, talked about Minwoo. That's where I bet him. And then a couple other guys we kicked around yesterday, Matt, our top 20 bets for me. Adam Scott couldn't get there on the outright play. Adam Scott has only played at the Masters about a million times, including winning one here. But I think what he's doing, you know, off the tee is probably better than ever right now with his game. And we have the podcast has bet him multiple times this year. The approach numbers are just insane. Last 24 rounds, he's third in this field on approach. So 18th in par five scoring, 14th even in scrambling. I think you're still going to have around the greens and putting concerns with Adam Scott. But man, what he's doing with the ball striking right now, good enough for me to at least to jump in at top 20. So I top 20'd him, plus 170. And then Jake Knapp, you brought him up. I know you're on him, Matt. You will get to him in a second. I played him in the top 20 market, plus 170. Okay, tournament matchups quick to roll through. Shoffley over Fleetwood, minus 123 on that. Look, I think Fleetwood's still live this week. The distance, the length off the tee matters a bit, though, here. I think minus 123, I thought was a generous price on Shoffley, so I got involved there. Adam Scott over Shane Lowry at minus 116. I actually got a bad number on this. I just saw it at another shop at like minus 109 where Scott was the dog. Really like that over Shane Lowry. Just think Lowry's saw the blow up at the Cognizant. I think he's going to struggle here this week. And then Cameron Young, minus 106 over Hideki. Love Cameron Young this week. I've got questions about what deck he can do this week. I thought that was a cheap price. Really like that tournament matchup. And then the two props that I've bet so far, got her up top debutante. And then shout out to Chris Felica for this one today because he was asking me about it before he came on to numbers game. Zach Johnson, top senior. Didn't really think I was going to be looking in the top senior market, but it is a group of a lot of guys that, like Matt said earlier, I think are pretty much infinity odds and we can cross off and you can get Zach Johnson at minus 120 in this market. He finished T8 here last year. I don't know if anybody remembers that. That's where Zach Johnson did a year ago at the Masters. And over on the Champions Tour now, we don't do much Champions Tour handicapping on this this program, but I think it's top five finishes and three events that he's teed it up in so far. So Zach Johnson, I'm going to roll with that minus 120 top
Kelly,
senior.
By the way, where did you find that top senior? Because I know some don't offer.
Yeah, MGM, and then I saw it at Caesars as well, but he at Caesars, I think he was like 175 or something. So shot
because I was down to him well and, or maybe
DraftKings markets.
Yeah, I was down to him or maybe Angel Cabrera for a low senior. Of course, we mentioned Tiger. Of course, Phil of not in this field where he would have certainly been the favorite. So, check around because some will offer those markets and some won't. But I know a lot of global books usually do.
Yeah, this is exactly. Look, he's 104 over at DraftKings, so good price over there.
And that's listed under groups, right, Kelly?
Yeah, groups, okay. And then go all the way down because it is going to give you the traditional, like, the traditional, like, group A, group B, like the six, or five, I guess, got five in each one here.
Yeah. All right. So I will get through the rest of this. If you happen to be watching us over on the Fast Channel, bonus stuff. We'll go a little bit long on this. Check out the rest over on YouTube. Check out the audio feed, whatever it might be. But I'll get through my picks here and we'll talk one and done. We'll talk tiers. We'll talk all of that. over on the extended version here of the pod. I came into this thinking I might want to be on ROM, and then the number just got me to the point where I actually took the opposite position and was trying to play against him, if at all possible. But the market didn't let me do that. Scotty is still minus 150 over John Rahm in a head-to-head. And yeah, so they're not letting me take advantage of the Rahm steam. Like, I get the recent form and all the stuff with Rahm or whatever, but, like, it's against a Charmin soft field on courses that, like, I could play on and still have decent, like, chances at doing well and whatever. So it's like, I'm not discounting John Rahm. He's friggin' John Rahm. But, like, we're down to 8-1 at one of the books or whatever and all this. Like, I got to see it with my own eyes in front of a real field and on a real course before I can, like, do anything with Rahm. So I moved past all of those guys and got to Ludwig as kind of the first target for me. He's out there. You can find, let's see, today still 18-1 if you're in a FanDuel market, 18-1 on Ludwig. He is second overall in my 20-round model, which would be the last five tournaments for everybody that has, you know, made the cut in all of them. And then he is fifth overall in the 40-round model, which, again, just is 10 tournaments if you made all the cuts, 11, 12 for people that have missed a cut or two along the way. He's basically the one you're looking for in a golfer in Ludwig. I mean, he's got the link. He's got he's actually, if you go in, we were talking about the stuff that I maybe even overvalue here, but like the three putt avoidance stuff with all of that, he's number one in this field over the last 5 years in three putt avoidance or whatever. And so, like, this, wow, he just doesn't three putt very often. He isn't like self-inflicting wounds guy here either with all of that. And like I said, you can see the form T3, T5, T5. I'm not worried about the Valero. Like I said, the conditions got terrible out there, so I'm not too worried about him doing that. A couple of guys that I share with Wes, so I don't have to go into too much detail here. I'm on Cam Young and on Minwoo. Granted, I took Minwoo a couple of weeks ago, so he was sitting in like 39-1. I think now he's down to like 33-1 or something, but still playable there for Minwoo. And then Cam Young, I am super, super high on now that he's proven he can win. And I think that is enough for me to back him at what is a much shorter number than I almost feel comfortable with. But I do think that he possesses all the tools here to get this done at this. Obviously, the length is there. We know that already. And certainly one of the dudes that can go as low as anybody whenever he gets hot. So, again, share that with Wes, and so we can kind of like move on from those two guys. Only two other outrights for me. And look, I'm going on a couple of dudes that not a ton of experience and all of that, but I'm playing Nikolai Højgaard and I'm playing Jake Knapp. Both of these guys fit the mold of exactly what I'm looking for here. And I think we are not too far off from us not worrying as much about the experience here as the evolution of golf continues, because all these younger dudes are super long. All these dudes are analytical focused. We have simulators now. We have all this stuff. It's not like you're walking out there and like completely seeing all of this stuff for the first time and all of that. And so I do think that you can at least get virtual experience. I understand it's not the same, but you can at least like get familiarity with the course without having to be out there and walking the grounds and stuff. Nikolai Højgaard just he fits everything I'm looking for, as does Jake Knapp. And he's through the injury. He drives it and he putts the hell out of it. Like we say, there's always a handful of guys that putt well, handful of guys that putt terribly, and everyone else is in the middle. He's actually one of the dudes that putts well, and he brings a putter with him everywhere he goes. And so really love Jake Knapp as well. And, you know, we'll talk tiers and we'll talk all the other stuff. But I mean, this is as a dude, Kelly pulls it up right now. You can see putter just absolutely on fire, and the majority of the time the approach game is still very, 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 very good for him there as well. So those are all of our outrights. Kelly got through a different thing. Again, join us if you're over on the Fast channel. Be sure, come in, take a look at us over there, and I've got some head-to-heads on the YouTube channel. Subscribe. We're going to be doing some more giveaways and all of that over there. But It is interesting. We do have, all of us have some love for Cam Young. It seems like all of us have some love for Minwoo as well. So if one of those guys were happen to get it home, then we would all be having a wonderful day with all that. Again, guys, as little as $9.99 to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. So go in, take advantage of that. You can get the full write-up that Wes has over there. And you can also go to the picks page. Not only get all of our picks just written down for you right there, but everybody else that has been on the network all week long as well will also have their picks up on there. So appreciate all of that. Stick around. We have more for all of this. Good luck on your Masters bets. Okay, for those of you here on YouTube, over on the audio side of things, we will roll on. So my outrights, Ludvig, Minwoo, Cam Young, Knapp, and Højgaard. Like I said, I played Bridgman in the debutante market. Bridgman actually modeled very well for me. Bridgman modeled as high as 16th okay. in my model.
Let me jump in right there real quick, because both you guys are on Bridgman, completely understand it, debutante market. I was a little surprised, actually, he didn't rate out higher for me, and then very surprised that Nikolai Højgaard didn't, because it feels like we've been betting him every damn week. I was kind of planning on going to the top 20 market with him too, and just a little surprised. But yeah, I think a lot of that, how much you're weighing off the tee, if you're doing some of the same stuff that we are at home, be careful a little bit. This player was a disaster. That's going to affect some numbers, but otherwise some very, very consistent finishes from him this year.
Well, and also too, depending on your model and how it works, if you put in strokes gained at Augusta, he's going to come up a zero, right?
Yeah,
and he's going to like some of these other things and whatever, like, so it's going to drag him down in some of these models, depending on how that works as well. So just something to consider when you're modeling out there. I have a bunch of head-to-heads, and
God bless the books, first of all. I wish this was every week sports books, like every week. Like, we need matchups like this. It is so nice to have this many tournament matchups to choose from. I am definitely not done with them, because it's almost, I could have fired on 12 probably.
Obviously, I love Nikolai. It feels like I've been betting him every single week, but his brother is a good golfer as well. His brother rates out really well here. He's super long. He actually is one of the few guys that does draw it off of the tee a decent amount, which helps with that right to left ball movement that we talk about. Because again, the reason lefties, the preferred shot choice for the majority of pros is to play a fade slash cut off of the tee these days. It's easier to control, and they're hitting it so far that they don't need an incredible amount of rollout and stuff anymore. And so most people hit a fade. So a lefty, obviously, a right to left hole, it plays into their shot shape more times than not off of the tee. Well, same goes for righties. Not very many guys hit draws really much anymore, but Rasmus Højgaard does. And so that's an interesting stat for him there in this one. They put up, it's more than I usually like to lay in a head-to-head, but it was minus 128, him over Max Homa. And man, I love Max Homa. Special place in my heart. I want a ton of money on Max Homa, but the game's just not there. And I think Højgaard is a much bigger favorite than a 128 head-to-head against Max Homa. So played that there. I played Knapp over Cantlay. I couldn't believe, even money. Knapp is just a better player than Cantlay is now. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. Like, it's a coin flip, it's even money, and I'm getting the better player at even money. Like, he is just a better player in every facet than Patrick Cantlay is. Love that one as well. Sam Burns over Corey Connors. We love Corey Connors on shorter positional courses. We don't love Corey Connors on courses typically like this, one of the shorter hitters in the field. Burns has added length, actually scores pretty well on par fives as well. We talked about the importance of that. So played Burns over Connors. And then, so it's a guy y'all all love. I'm playing against a guy that I don't like that y'all both like. So I'm playing Cam Young against Matt Fitzpatrick. I'm getting him as a dog against Fitzpatrick here in this one. Cam Young rates out better for me, the stuff that I put in, over Fitzpatrick in all the models that I ran, not by a ton, but a couple slots here and there with all of that. And I'm getting plus money. So plus money on a dude that I really think has high win equity in this thing was good for me. So I took Cam Young.
You found
over
that plus
Matt's
money?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm a little surprised at some of the Cameron Young pricing in these matchups. I was shocked at the minus 106 over Hideki I found.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's interesting when it comes down to some of these guys start to get some love, and then, man, it just starts running again. Like, yeah. You know, it's, I know y'all both love, like, Fitzpatrick, maybe the most talked about guy I've heard all week from every, from everybody or whatever. And then, like, it just runs, right? And, like, people go in, try to find ways to bet him left and right. And then I think it opens up opportunities maybe to go against. And it's not that I don't like the guy. It's just the price that is attached to whatever. And you kind of have to go in that direction. Two placement markets for me. And I think it's one that either both of y'all have or whatever. I played Xander top 10 and I played Scott top 20. Xander might be the one guy I look to get in on.
Yeah.
In tournament. Just a major stud. He just shows up at all the majors. And I think that there's also, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Kelly. I'll say it again for the new audience here. Most of these big national books do live top fives, live top tens, live top 20s, like as the tournament is going. And man, Xander might not go light it up, but Xander's like a two under, three under machine. And he might not actually compete to win, but you're going to look up and be like, oh, there he is in fourth again. Or like, oh, there he is, you know, whatever. There he is in sixth again. It's just like the guy just goes out and grinds and gets it done more times than not. And so really do like him. And I think he's a guy that I'll be looking at to maybe try to get into one of those type of markets with all of that. So that's where I'm at from bets that are in the account currently as we are recording this on Tuesday morning. We still have a lot of time between now and when this tees off, so we will try to be sure and get this stuff out on Twitter or on beeson.com or both or whatever it is. Various shows that we'll all be on between now and then, so be sure and do that. So let's talk about some of the guys we didn't play, because I know there's going to be some people out there that are curious as to why we did not. Obviously, none of us are on Rory. None of us are on Bryson. These are going to be two names that are going to be very, very talked about as we head in over the next 48 hours. Wes, when you look at this, Bryson priced about the same as Rom out there. Obviously, Bryson coming off a couple wins as well for him. And then Rory a little bit behind them in the odds market and dealing with maybe, who knows, maybe still dealing with some sort of injury situation. Don't really know. I guess we can try and figure that out between now and when they tee off.
Yeah, I'll tie Rory in a little bit with another guy that we haven't talked about that I know we were going to get to, and that's Colin Morikawa.
Yeah.
And that's injury issues. It might be a little bit less pronounced with Rory because Rory didn't withdraw from one of the Texas events like Morikawa did at the Valero last week. And, you know, just the reports we're getting on Morikawa is that the ball speed's a little bit down and, you know, what he was off the tee in the practice round. So I'm not jumping in necessarily to like fade a Colin Morikawa or a Rory necessarily here in a matchup, but I probably will have no exposure really to those two. And Rory, of course, comes back defending champion, champion's dinner. There was a little hit piece from one of the British tabloids yesterday bringing up some of his the issues that he was obviously talking about with his marriage last year and whatnot. And, you know, which was kind of shameful, to be honest with you. I mean, to do that the week of the Masters when he's getting his victory lap for the career Grand Slam, and then the New York Post piled on as well. So, you know, talking about his relationship with Caroline Wozniacki, I was like, that was like 10 years ago. I even forgot that they were together. But, you know, Rory, he did play the Players, but he was like 40 something. And I he's not certainly at his peak. Like last year when we all bet him in some kind of shape or form, like he had won the Players. It was like, this is the year. This seems like the year, right? And it does. And it always can with him. But yeah, not for me this time around on Rory. And then with Bryson, he's won a couple times on LIV. And I do, even though I did play Rom, I do share Matt's concern about, A, has the competition been that great? You have not been playing on, like, you know, bears of courses by any stretch of the imagination where you're shooting 20 something under to win. So That concerned me, I think, a little bit more for Bryson than it did for Rahm, because I think Rahm's form has at least been more consistent than Bryson. Like, Bryson's got a couple wins, but he's also got where he's finished 20th or higher in those fields. So there's a lot more variance, and then there's a lot more up and down with Bryson than there is, I think, with Rahm, certainly.
Yeah.
Kelly, what did you think about those two guys? Again, probably the two most talked about as we head into this, for sure.
Yeah, this is, I already said it. I think Rory, I'm not completely out on Rory. I think that there is, I'm going to wait and see. Look, the back's a bit of a concern. I just think he is a player. I'm not overly concerned about it, though. I honestly think I'd rather see him tee off. And I think you could do the same approach to Morikawa, right? Like, you don't need to, like, just like you were talking about live top five, top tens, Matt, live outrights, they're a thing. You don't need
to. We might have learned our lesson from the Players Championship, right? On Morikawa.
Yeah, that's right. There's no reason. You don't have to rush. If you want to say, hey, let me see how this guy looks like for nine holes or something, you could do that. I don't know that I'm definitely going to be out on Rory. Well, I'm going to see where this continues to move, if it continues to. I think there's going to be a buyback point at some point, though, if he does drift far enough out by bettors out there. And I think there should be. Bryson, I guess, Wes summed it up perfectly. It's just, look, it's live, out of sight, out of mind. We're not watching these guys every single week. To me, it is pretty clear I'd rather have John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, specifically here, specifically with some of the recent form coming in, the consistency like Wes talked about, and some of Bryson's troubles in the past year. Yeah, he's played well the past couple years. Not looking to, kind of like you brought up earlier, Matt. Yeah, sure. He was kind of the one guy at the top of the board. I was looking to see what some of the other matchups against him, what the pricing was going to be, but nothing was good enough to make me jump in on the other side. So I think I'm just going to be kind of Bryson neutral this week. Maybe in tournament, looks a bet against him, but it's not, definitely not someone I'm pro looking to bet on. But didn't bet anything against him either. So but look, I think if one of the guys, if I had to name someone at the top of the board that I would rate lowest, it would be Bryson. I do think there's a point where Rory I could jump in on. And then, yeah, Morikawa, you brought up, Wes, real quick. I just think, look, people probably get bored if you listen to us every single week. Like, hey, man, lay -130 with Matt Fitzpatrick in a top 20 market. Like, I love that bet this week. But like, hey, Morikawa, if you want to just bet it outright and know that like you're getting a really good price on him if the back is right, like that's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all I would do with him this week is either do that or wait till in tournament. I just wouldn't be going hammering a bunch of money in matchups and in top 20s and stuff like that when we do know. The back is an issue, and he spoke about it even today, right? He had comments at Augusta today that were not very, I don't think, very positive that you could feel great about going to back him right now.
So, I mean, look, the one thing, so the Masters, you can go to masters.com. They let you look at range sessions over there on masters.com. He hit 45 balls today. The longest shot he hit was 280 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, somebody might like, oh, well, he was hitting 3-wood or something. I just went in, like, the ball speed was 173. Like, he ain't hitting a 3-wood, 173 miles an hour with the ball speed. Like, it, now he could just be taking it easy. Like, this could just be like a, hey, I'm not going to tweak this thing on the range and like whatever. But again, if this is something that you want to, you know, if you want to factor that into, you just got to know what you're getting into, right? Yes. Like, if you're going to bet Morikawa, you just got to understand. Again, he only hit 45 balls. The longest shot today was 280 yards. It definitely was a driver. I'm looking at the launch angle and whatever. Like, it was a driver. So, I mean, he only hit it 280 yards, right? I mean, again, he could just be taking it easy. We don't know. Like, these are all things we have no idea, but the risks are there for sure.
Yep.
Totally. With Morikawa. So Matt, just know what you're getting into.
What are your thoughts? What's that? What are your thoughts, Rory and Bryson?
So I'm looking at Rory's session right now. His the same deal. Like, Rory's longest drive was 299 on the range today. Mm. He's a 300 plus dude. Yeah. Like, you know, whatever. Again, he seems more likely to me than Morikawa to maybe be a dude that just takes it easy because it's like he knows it's there. Like he knows if he needs to crank it up to 315, 320, like it's there, you know? So I take a little less out of it than I do with Morikawa, but again, just another thing to to take into account. I think with Rory, I would play Rory like as a high leverage play in contests, probably, as opposed to maybe betting whatever. I think people are going to be scared of Rory. They're not going to want to like play him in a one and done or in like.
Probably where you should use him. Right. You know, because that's what you save these guys for, of course, our major championships. So, yeah, Rory, I don't think is going to be necessarily very popular of the top end players this week.
So let's talk two other guys before we get into the tiers contest and a couple of, you know, listen, I don't know between the three of us how many times we've bet Tommy Fleetwood, and none of us even mentioned Tommy Fleetwood here as we head into this one. For me, really and truly, just plain and simple for me, he's just too short for me for this course. And so
he's a US Open player for me.
He doesn't sniff really popping in the model for me, considering a guy that is as skilled as him, who is always inside the top five, basically in all of my model, like always is always in there, and he's not. Now he's like in like 12, 13 spot and stuff like that. Like, you know, again, to me, it's just, I love Tommy. I just don't love Tommy here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm right there with you, Matt. It's tough, man. Like, you can make a case for all these guys, right? Like, these are the best of the best that we're talking through right now. I guess same thing as Bryson. I'm not actively looking to go fade Tommy. However, I did play against him in a matchup with Xander Schauffele at minus 123. Obviously, I think there's some value on that number at minus 123 on Xander. So that is, how much higher rated I have Xander over Tommy. I think he's... Would we be shocked if he went out there and won the Masters? No, I wouldn't. Because guess what? He can do everything else, right? He can absolutely do everything else. But it is the distance. And yes, Matt, I think with so many guys you can make good cases for this week, he was just easy to leave off to the side.
Tommy at Shinnecock Hills for the U.S. Open might be, because he, of course, in 2018 finished runner-up to one Brooks Koepka. So I wouldn't mind seeing him play a little poorly and not winning for a while, because I like him in grinder type majors at like the U.S. Open or even some years at the Open Championship. I just think that like he's that type of player. It was almost like when Bubba Watson, like this was the major he was going to win right at the Masters and kind of hit it all over the place and get away with it. Can't really do that at the U.S. Open. So you want more pure ball strikers at the U.S. Open. And I think Tommy Fleetwood would fit that to a T.
Few more guys here and we'll get out and we'll move on to the tiers. Just if you have any thoughts on these, if there's no thoughts, we can just move on. Big name dudes, Justin Thomas, Victor Hovland, Jason Day, Brooke. We talked a little bit about Brooks Koepka, Sepp Straka. These are all guys that are, you know, 70-ish. Yeah. Hovland, I think, is like 50 in the market or something out there or whatever. But all big name dudes, all guys that have, you know, had a little bit of a flash this year. Even Thomas coming off of the injury flashed his second tournament back and all of that. But I'll be perfectly honest, like not, I didn't even consider any of them. Like, I mean, it wasn't even like a, like at all.
Too many coaching changes and swing adjustments for Victor Hovland for me. It's like, I wish he would just like kind of stick with something, but he's a constant tinkerer. And I'm always tempted, not falling prey to it, I'm always tempted by the price with this guy because the talent is there.
Yeah.
Like, he's a major champion type caliber player. He really is. But he's constantly messing around. He's going back to this swing coach. Now he's working with this guy in Nashville. Now he's working with that guy. And it just, we saw what was the thing he was wearing at Pebble Beach. He was wearing some kind of like weird contraption. It looked like tin cup. When Kevin Costner was in the trailer with Cheech Marin,
on him, man.
Oh my God, you're so good! Like, what are you doing, man? You know,
I do think consistency. I think it's interesting though that Matt rattled off all those names, and Victor was going to be the first one I was going to mention, and Wes did it first. I still think if I believed one of these guys from that group was going to come out of there victorious, Matt, I think I would still say Victor Hovland. Wes just went through every reason why I'm not betting him, but I think of everybody you just ran off in that group, I would still be least shocked by Victor getting it done.
So, guys, we are running a contest with Splash, splashsports.com/VEASAN. There are six tiers. You go in, you pick a guy from each tier, and your lowest score guy gets dropped, but if you have two guys that don't make the cut, it's a +8 penalty. So, again, you're you're not going to win, basically what it comes down to. You got to at least have five guys make the cut. You're not going to win any money if you have two guys that miss the cut in this thing. And so as we kind of go through tier one, Scotty, Rahm, Rory, Xander, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick, Young, McIntyre, DeChambeau, and Ludwig, it's a pretty strong tier. Like we said, I think that there are some game theory that can go on with this tier, because I do think that there will be people who will be a little less apt to play Rory, a little less apt to play Scotty this week. So I do think that you could, if you tried to game theory it a little bit, and then obviously if we're looking at this, this 10 players, it's pretty easy for us to understand the lowest owned is going to be Bob McIntyre. So if you want to play pure game theory, like Bob McIntyre is definitely going to be the lowest owned in this tier for sure.
Yeah. Same thing. If you're going game theory, I think Rory would be your play. If you ask, okay, Wes, who do you like the best out of those? It'd probably be Rahm or Cameron Young. Mm-hmm. The fear factor guy for me, and I didn't get a chance to mention it earlier, Matt, when you were talking about your outrights, of course, Ludwig Göberg on your card. He's the fear factor guy for me. Like, he's the guy. I have more for him than I would for like a Scotty or a Rory, honestly, because the guy, if you remember last year, was one stroke off the lead of Rory, who had dominated most of the day, and Justin Rose with two holes to play. And then he went bogey triple and ended up T7. It's a mental thing with him. It's almost like he's going to finish one of these off at one time. It's just, when is he going to do it? Because we saw it. Look, I had him at the Players. Fortunately, had a couple of guys with insurance there that eventually won. But sometimes, man, it's like he gets that back nine and something goes wrong, so you're kind of waiting for it. Eventually, it's going to happen for him where he wins one of these. But Ludwig is my definite fear factor guy that I didn't play this week.
Kelly, as you look at that tier, I think most owned, Rahm Fitzpatrick. I think least owned, definitely McIntyre. And I think, like I said, I think that there will be a decent amount of people who don't want to play Rory. I'm not going to say he'll be the second least owned, but I do think that there'll be a lot of people who are worried about the injury side of things and decide not to to click on Rory.
Yeah, this is I think you're right. I don't think Tommy's going to be very popular either. If you had to, you're picking from this group.
Yeah.
I think he would be the next guy for me I'd add in there. But we'll do a little game theory here. I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy. I'm going to fill one out as we go here.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. If I knew for sure Scotty was going to be like the fifth most popular person in that tier, then give me the world number one, if I knew for sure that he's going to like have four other dudes that are higher owned than him, then I would just, I'd click him every single time, but I just don't know.
I would probably go with Xander here just because I think he's the most consistent banker. We were talking about earlier, like he's going to somehow finish in that top five to top 10, even if he doesn't win, even if he goes 70, 70, 70 all 4 days, that's going to be probably good enough. So he's like he's your conservative play that I think will get you a return.
In the
tier two is Russell Henley, Hideki Matsuyama, Colin Morikawa, Brooks Koepka, Minwoo Lee, Jake Knapp, Jake Rose, Patrick Reed, Justin Rose, Patrick Reed, Akshay Batia, and Mav McNeely. So a whole bunch of guys we bet sitting here in tier number two. So obviously I have an outright on Minwoo, as does Wes. I have Jake Knapp in an outright. Wes has Akshay and Patrick Reed in an outright. So we've talked about a lot of these guys. This is a super, super interesting tier. And this might actually be where this tournament, where this contest is won at Splash, is to picking the right guy out of this tier.
Yeah, 100%.
Rose is like my Xander in this, where he's like your banker. Like, he's your guy that's going to get you some kind of result here. Mm-hmm. I think of all these guys, you could say that guy's going to get me a result because he's got 12 top 20s here in like 20 years and has made the cut 17 times. So he's like your more conservative play. I think the low-owned guy will probably be Russell Henley because he's not maybe long enough here. Like, he maybe falls into that trap with Fleetwood a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely could.
Kelly, what's the tier two thought here?
Yeah, this is, I think it's fascinating. I think you said it best, Matt. This is probably where it's won or lost. And this is
one of these guys is going to be in the top three, top three or four in this tournament. So it's like you got to pick which one of these dudes is going to be in the top three, essentially.
I also don't know that I'd be shocked if we saw a couple of these guys like miss the cut or flirt with it.
Right.
Like I think that's possible too. But I think we should go through popularity, right? Like I think Minwoo, I think Matsuyama, I think
Hideki, yes, absolutely.
Patrick Reed for sure. I think those guys are going to be up there. Henley, McNeely, Morikawa because of the injury. Actually, I don't know. I could see Morikawa going both ways. I think this is probably a little too high for Brooks. I don't think there's going to be too much love for Brooks here. That would be my guess.
If this was a $50 entry, I would say fade Morikawa, like because people are just going to be on him. Like, because they don't even know that he's injured. You know what I'm saying? Like they would look at this tier and like whatever.
He's
but
the best. Yeah.
The fact that this is a $500 buy-in contest, then now it's kind of like, well, I don't know. There's going to be dudes that definitely know the Morikawa situation. And I think that there are some people who might be pretty hesitant to play him. And so I think that it's at least a conversation to have with Morikawa. But obviously, I think Minwoo can win this tournament. I think Jake Knapp can win this tournament. I think Akshay, given the right situation, could win this tournament. So I think there are dudes that can legitimately win this tournament in this tier. So
I'm going to go with Minwoo Lee here. We'll get us there over to tier three.
Tier three, Sam Burns, Jacob Bridgman, Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, Siwoo Kim, Nikolai Højgaard, Chris Goddard, Ben Griffin, Tyrrell Hatton, and Jordan Spieth. We have a couple of guys that we bet on here in this one as well. Wes and I both like Bridgman from a debutant standpoint. I have Burns in a head-to-head. I have Højgaard in an outright. I have and you have Goddard up, right, Kelly?
Yeah, I have Goddard up. And it is fascinating going through this because we try to address all the big names. I will say, for people out there wondering, Justin Rose did rate out pretty highly for me just in recent four bottles, as well as Bobby Mack. You and I were talking about this last weekend, Matt, where it's just like, there's a chance he could just drive and putt and around the green like enough to get home. I don't think that would be the most shocking thing in the world. Man, Siwoo Kim, we quickly forget how good he was playing at the beginning of the year, right?
He will be popular because I think people will look at that form line. And he's been a consistent cut maker here.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Siwoo's off the tee, if he's good enough here. Like the ball striking? No, top 10s.
Has never lost strokes putting at Augusta, I believe I heard earlier this week.
That's weird. So, yeah, right. That is weird.
Siwoo Kim, and then the other guy, why I started bringing this up is because I bet him last week, and that I made my donation to him last week. I don't think I need to do it again, maybe ever again this year. Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth rated out highly again for me this week. He's like top 20 range. So
his approaches have been good lately.
Yeah, yeah. Just another guy, another big name that we didn't bring up. I wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're talking win equity in this tier, just the skills to actually do it. I mean, Sam Burns is a multi-time winner on tour. Bridgman, we like Wes. You and I like that he's won on a big boy course in a big boy field. Hovland, if for whatever reason he can find it, obviously we know he can do it as well. We have not seen it yet from Højgaard, though I think the skills are there. I don't like Cantlay's form when it comes down to it. Goddard, obviously, multi-time winner as well. So I think any of those guys I would feel comfortable with, and I think you're going to be shocked at the ownership because I think a lot of people are going to click Cantlay.
And I don't like Hatton at the Masters either. If there's a major you like him in, he's kind of a U.S. Open or an Open Championship guy, and plus his form has not been good. Something goes wrong early, he could explode. So that'd be a no for me. It'd be Bridgman or Højgaard, one of the young guns. I think I'd use in tier three.
And it was fun knowing you, Ben Griffin. Like last year was great, buddy. And like, it was fun knowing you. Like it's you know,
we had to ask the questions we asked at the beginning of the year, right? It was like, it was insane putting for like a whole summer from Ben Griffin.
He had a heater. It's awesome. That's great. Like, he was on a heater. It is.
I have a feeling this is going to be the easiest tier for me. I'm just going to jump out in front of it, Matt.
Adam Scott, Sepp Straka, Shane Lowry, Corey Connors, JJ Spawn, Cam Smith. If you click Cam Smith, just don't. Please click Cam Smith and donate your $500. Please do that. Justin Thomas, Jason Day, Harris English, and Kurt Kitayama. I would just play the chalk here, man. Adam Scott all day long.
It's Adam Scott. This is the easiest. This is the easiest one for me to go through so far. Adam Scott, and we're moving on.
It's like I'll differentiate myself elsewhere, but I'll play the chalk, man. Like I'm playing the chalk right.
This one's interesting to me too because there's only there's three names I would consider on tier five. We have
Taylor, Ryan Gerard, Alex Noren, Harry Hall, Keegan Bradley. We got Rasmus of the Højgaards. Mm-hmm. We got Sam Stevens, Daniel Berger. We got the Jarvis fella. And then we got Ryan Fox. The Jarvis fella doesn't even get the Jarvis fella is a blue man.
I know.
Except he's white. Like
three times in December or something. Yeah, and that's how he got in.
I brought it up earlier on the pod, but you guys have no idea where I was like, freaking Casey Jarvis. Who's this? I forget who I was loaded up in a matchup, and I'm like, putting him a pretty big bet. I'm like, okay, let me go do more research.
South African player with a lot of pedigree, but not a lot of major championship experience.
Not a lot, but you're right though, Wes. He's played well so far this season, and then in December too. He's racked up some really cool.
Because I know some smart people that are playing like Charles Schwartzel in the low South African, certainly against Mr. Jarvis.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
This, all right, to Kelly, me, you said there were three names that you would play. What are those three names?
The other Højgaard, Daniel Berger, and the one I'm going to land on is Ryan Fox, who has kind of been on our radar a few times this year. Actually, no, that's probably disrespectful to Ryan Gerard, who has been very good this year as well, to say these are the only three guys that I would consider. But if I'm going to consider Berger for what he can bring ball striking wise, then I have to consider Gerard. I'm going to go with Ryan Fox, though. This is a guy that has played very well this year, one of the older guys out there. But man, what you get with him off the tee, and then what he's been doing at a couple tournaments this year was really on my radar probably like about a month ago. And then it was the, what do you have, kidney stones, right? Had to go get surgery for him. That put him out, and then he was back playing like the next week. So I don't know if you're looking for a warrior when it comes to golf, but Ryan Fox battling through an injury and surgery.
If you're leaning more on big hitters, certainly Fox is considered, but it'd be Rasmus or Sam Stevens, I think, for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm getting in that tier and I'm just like, who's a dude that I feel at least strongly about making the cut? I might go old Alex Noren, man. Like, I mean, he's not going to make a run to win the thing or something, but like, he's probably going to make the cut. Like, he's just kind of a cut maker.
It's amazing that he's never won on the PGA Tour, and he's won like almost like 15 times, I think, on the DP and against good fields and big events.
Look, he's made four straight cuts. I mean, the Genesis, the API, the Players. He made the cut at Valero this past week. It's just like, he's never going to contend, but it's like, he just made cuts, you know?
I think all three of us bet him at some point this year, right? Like, this is a very much a pro Noren podcast. The approach numbers make this a pro Noren podcast.
Yeah, there we go. And then our final tier, we have Carlos Ortiz, Michael Kim, Mike McCarty. Oh my God, this tier is horrific.
Yeah.
What do you do with this tier? You go Pinge every time, right? So Marco Pinge, you got Gary Woodland. I guess if you want to do Woodland, Aaron Rye. We got Wrighton. We got Echeverria. We got Harmon, Grazerman. Grazerman's like 60% to miss the cut. So I don't know. I can't do him.
Do either of you believe that Wyndham Clark or Andrew Novak find anything this week?
Maybe Clark. Maybe Clark because he does at least have length. Because he's been, I think, really erratic. But you know, you get a pedigree with a former major champion. So is this all tier six here?
This tier is just massive. Like,
I'm with you though, Matt. I think it's pretty easy to go to Pinge.
Sungjae might get used here because he's one of the more well-known names. Yeah. And if you look at his form, like I know last year, like he was dealing with the injury and his game kind of, you know, not really fell off a cliff, but certainly slipped. But man, Sungjae, when you look at him, 4 of 6 made cuts. He's got 2 top 5s, 3 top 10s, and 4 top 20s here in his career. That's a pretty good record.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'll even say there's a chance that we're underrating the guy.
Yeah.
So this could be the whole too close to the sun thing, right? Like when we're looking at these numbers every single week and betting golf every single week. Yeah, I think it's fair to say there's a chance that we're underrating Sungjae.
I think it's fair.
I think I'd go Penge still, though. Wyndham Clark does interest me with the wide fairways, though. I will say that. Hey, you brought it up, Wes. We're worried about him missing, being all erratic. Wyndham Clark having 50 yards of fairway to deal with makes that feel a little bit more comfortable.
And people will be tempted by Woodland, obviously a great story and just one. But Woodland has never really been good here.
See, this is one Matt brought it up before. If this was a $10 entry, I'd be firing Gary every single time.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. $500 bucks now, I'm going to be a little bit smarter with this. I'm going to go Penge. I think Wyndham Clark would be number two on here for me. What would you guys go top two here?
This tier is tough.
I think you could make a case for Michael Kim, Wyndham Clark, Novak, Sungjae Im, brought it up. Okay, how about the big hitters we've mentioned so far this year, but we didn't talk about it all in this podcast, Brennan and Potgieter. Any interest at all in either of those fellas today?
Okay.
Yeah, you get all the old guys then too.
Okay. Charles Schwartzel is interesting because he can still, like, he's not playing badly on LIV. He contends maybe a few times a year. He's on that leaderboard. He hadn't won in a long time, but Charles Schwartzel can still hit it out there in his early 40s. So do you get one or two from this tier?
Just one.
Okay. Well, he would be
Davis
a consider.
Riley been up to.
Charles Schwartzel would be a consider for me, actually, because he'll find a way to make the cut.
I think from a skills perspective, obviously Penge is the skills guy here.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I guess Penge, but
we could be underrating Sungjae.
You got a lot of guys that are going to shoot big numbers off this list. And I'm not even talking about the older, the Mike Weirs of the world. So some of these young guys, you do wonder their first time, where it's like you see them on the stats and they got the talent, but how are they going to react when they hit that first bad shot in the trees? And then all of a sudden they're looking up and they shot 81 at the end of the first round.
Who are the most popular in this group? I think you play that game, right? Penge, Woodland, Sungjae.
Probably Wyndham. I mean, he's a household
Max Homa.
Name.
Yeah, Wyndham, Homa. Max Homa. People still liking Bubba Watson. I don't want to say his name.
I don't know. Maybe like the average Joe won't look at the stats and see Aldrich Potgieter like number one in the world in driving. So I don't know if he's going to be heavily used.
You know what? That's a good call. I think I'm going to go Potgieter because of that. I don't know though. I don't know if Penge is on enough people's radar. I'm going Penge. I'm going Penge
because he played well last week, and I think we all liked him, or I certainly liked him for Houston. And then he was terrible there, and then he was pretty good in San Antonio.
There we go. You know what? A prop I would consider, too, and not knowing the price at all, but I think there are only a few books that post this, but a nationality of winner, I tell you, the Australian, or how do they word it in the books, the Australasia, like, man, I think that's live this week. Between Minwoo, Adam Scott, Ryan Fox from New Zealand, like all these, mm-hmm. these guys got a chance. Man.
They should call it Oceania. Oceania, because
No, you'll see it like that too. You'll see it like that.
The Kiwis, yes. Right. Yes.
All right. Well, there's a practice one.
Yes.
And I owe Splash $500, but I can't pay you, Splash. Sorry. I can't officially edit this where I'm at right now. You're not going to let me.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, I'll have placement markets up tomorrow at beeson.com/picks because it's actually been working for me, to be honest with you, to kind of take a separate day for that, because that's how I've been at least slightly, barely on the plus side for the season, because the outrights have been a little slow for me to start. Hopefully we turn that around this week.
Okay, I've gone to AI and I have taken all the list of the people that went in and put their name into, or that went and subscribed to our YouTube channel, and we can actually find who you are. If you're watching this on YouTube, I said to the AI, I said, hey, here's the list of people. I said, randomize this 1,000 times and pick three winners out of this. And so if you are Brian Ulrich or Austin Chandler or Jason Plunkett, and we will put all three of those names into the thing down below, contact us on the Twitter machine. Contact me on the Twitter machine. Contact Kelly on the Twitter machine, Wes, whoever it is or something. We just got to get some information from you, and I will send you some Masters stuff. So again, if you are Brian Ulrich, Austin Chandler, or Jason Plunkett, and you can verify that that's actually you over on the YouTube, then there you go. You won. There's our three winners for the contest. Kelly, I don't know why Kelly's muted or whatever, but like, you know, that's
I was muted. Sorry.
But he's showing you the official logo.
I was going to say, you can get a sweet Masters shirt from Matt just like me.
I don't know if I still have any more of those or not, but I definitely have some t-shirts left. So like I definitely have a t-shirt left, and I have like a cup, and I got a pin flag. So like I've got stuff. Nice, I have stuff.
Are you going to sign them?
And then I am not going to sign them.
And then people can lie about it later. They could be like, this is actually Scottie Scheffler. I got his. I don't know. People, you can request that. Matt Brown will sign it if you ask him to.
Well, see, so there you go.
How long was I muted for? I feel like I said a lot of intelligent things. The best things I said on the podcast were while I was muted, just so you guys know. Now I forgot.
All right, guys, appreciate you hanging with us for overtime here. Again, if you have not done so already, please hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up. Let us know in the comment section, how are you going to bet the Masters? If you're listening to us audio side, same deal. Subscribe, rate, review. Do appreciate all of that. And again, if you want the full breakdown, everybody on the network, all the thoughts, beeson.com. You can get in for as little as $9.99. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Masters bets.